Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When requested by their father to accept Shunakshepa as the eldest son, the elder 50 of the Madhuchandas, the sons of Vishvamitra, did not agree. Therefore, Vishvamitra, being angry, cursed them. May all you bad sons become lechers, he said, being opposed to the principles of Vedic culture. So please repeat. When requested by their father to accept Shunakshepa as the eldest son, the elder 50 of the Madhuchandas, the sons of Vishvamitra, did not agree. Therefore, Vishvamitra, being angry, cursed them. May all of you bad sons become lechers, he said, being opposed to the principles of Vedic culture. Purport. In Vedic literature, there are names like Mlecha and Yavana. The Mlechas are understood to be those who do not follow the Vedic principles. In former days, the Mlechas were fewer, and Vishvamitra Muni cursed his sons to become Mlechas. But in the present age, Kali Yuga, there is no need of cursing, for people are automatically Mlechas. This is only the beginning of Kali Yuga, but at the end of Kali Yuga, the entire population will consist of Mlechas, because no one will follow the Vedic principles. At that time, the incarnation Kalki will appear, Mlecha Nivaha Nitane Kalayasi Karabalam. He will kill all the Mlechas indiscriminately with his sword. Ye Madhuchandaso Jeshtach Kushalang Menire Natat Ashapattan Munich Krutho Mlecha Bhavatadur Janaha. When requested by their father to accept Shunakshepa as the eldest son, the elder 50 of the Madhuchandas, the sons of Vishvamitra, did not agree. Therefore, Vishvamitra, being angry, cursed them. May all of you bad sons become lechers, he said, being opposed to the principles of Vedic culture. Om Agyana Timarandasya, Gyananjana Shalakaya, Chakshurun Militam Yena, Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha, Shri Chaitanya Mano Bistang, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam, Dadati Sva Padantikam. Vande Hang Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitangs Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitangscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpati Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Brindavanishvari Brishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Mancha Kalpa Tarupyascha Kripa Sindhubya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So with all your permission, we'll try and say something appropriate. It's difficult to speak after hearing such a nice class from Bhakti Prema Maharaj. Very nice class yesterday. Just going back to the first verse, just a little point. Shunakshepa is known as Deva Rata. Did anyone catch the reason why? No, he was meant to be sacrificed. This is how it happened. The father of Shunakshepa, he sold his son. Interesting thing to do. Someone bought his son and was going to sacrifice the son to the demigods. And what happened was, Shunakshepa, he pleaded with the demigods, please spare me. And actually the demigods were very agreeable to this because they could see that Shunakshepa was spiritually advanced. So because he's been protected by the demigods, he's known as Devarata. Now you can compare this to Pariksit Maharaj. He's known as Vishnu Rata. Why? He was protected by Vishnu in the womb. You see? So Rata means protected. So this is, it's actually interesting, the sort of the concept of ownership of the body. It's different from what we consider nowadays, right? Like, we don't hear about people selling. Well, actually, it does happen. But generally, only in a desperate situation would someone sell their son or their daughter. For a start, how can you sell someone if you don't own them, right? Ultimately, Ishavashyam Idam Sarvam. Everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. So the very concept that you own your son or your daughter, for that matter, it is not a correct way to look at things. But actually, having said that, within the culture, there is scope for this kind of dealing. Now, here's an interesting example. In the fourth canto, Jiva Goswami, it's one purport, Prabhupada explains that it is bona fide, and this is based on, Jiva Goswami actually confirms this, it is bona fide if someone has a daughter, they can give their daughter in marriage to someone on the condition that the son becomes their son. You see? So therefore, in this situation, the daughter's son is actually now becomes the grandfather's son. This is a concept of ownership. So it's kind of, it's difficult to, I mean, I don't fully understand this concept. And here's another example. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Shakshi Gopal pastime. Now remember, there's an older Brahmin and a younger Brahmin. And the younger Brahmin serves the older Brahmin very nicely. Now the younger Brahmin, he's not of such high caste. But the older Brahmin was very satisfied with the service. So he said, I will give you my daughter in marriage. So then the younger Brahmin, he says, well, you know, you're from an aristocratic family. It's not a good idea. And the older Brahmin, he said, she's my daughter. I can give her to whoever I like. It's like, now in modern, we think about this in today's culture. It's like, it's considered like a horrible thing to do. For a start, where's the consideration of the daughter, right? You know, it's like the daughter is like, in this instance, it seems that the daughter has been treated like a piece of an object, like some property. And then because the father's pleased, then the daughter is given without any apparent consideration to the needs of the daughter. It's just like, I'm happy with you, therefore you can take my daughter. It's an interesting concept. But actually, I mean, on this point, I mean, there's a number of things we can say. For a start, we don't know what else the Brahmin was thinking. Maybe he could see that this person was suitable for his daughter, right? It's not mentioned. I mean, generally in the Vedic culture, where there's arranged marriage, then there's a calculation done. You know, the nature of the different people are considered, and then astrology is done. So it's not just some blind situation. I mean, it's very rare these days, arranged marriages. Now, I mean, there's one devotee named Dr. Gupta. I don't know if you know him. I don't know if he still does, but he used to teach Ayurveda in ISKCON in various places. I remember in New Zealand, I was living in the same place as him, and he was teaching Ayurvedic classes at the LOF program, which was run by Devanrita Swami in Auckland. So he had a very strict arranged marriage. It was one of those situations where the curtain was there and never seen his wife before, his wife never seen him before. And he remember him telling, he said, before the actual marriage, his wife's father spoke to his father and said, is it just possible if my daughter can see your son first, just to make sure. He was a little bit apprehensive. You know, you don't know what you're going to get, right? So that Dr. Gupta's father, he replied, "If your daughter does not trust your judgment, why should my son trust your daughter?" So then there was no pre-darshan, right? You couldn't change your mind. So then it was just a curtain there, and then they got to see each other for the first time. I don't know how the marriage got on. He said to me there was a lot of problems in the marriage, and it took a while to get to know each other. And he did a lot of traveling as well, so I don't know exactly the situation. I mean, I don't know so many examples where it actually works out. But anyway, we're going back to the concept of property. The scriptures, they give some interesting answers on who owns the body. So one may think, and generally in modern society, we think, I am the owner of my body. That mood is very prevalent. Therefore, we have, for example, the concept of euthanasia. I own my body. Therefore, if I want to kill myself, I have the right to do so, right? This is the modern concept, and it's been pushed. Different countries have different stances on that. But we understand this is actually bogus, because the body doesn't belong to oneself. We have the example of Sanatana Goswami. So his body was covered in sores. Therefore, he was thinking to kill himself. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, you cannot do this. You know, your body belongs to me. Therefore, you should engage in the service that I give you. That is actually the proper concept. Our body does not belong to us. It is a gift from Krishna, and ultimately belongs to Krishna. From the spiritual perspective, that is actually the correct answer, and it's the only answer. Now, there's other ways it's looked at in the scriptures. For example, the body is made of material energy, bhumi, rapa, nalo, vayu, etc. So this, because it's made of material energy, it belongs to Mother Nature. Therefore, we can say the body belongs to Mother Nature. I know we have in the Christian tradition, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. The idea is, this body, it comes from dead matter. It's constructed for a while. The soul leaves, and then it goes back to dead matter. So we can say that. I gave the example of the father of the daughter. That is sometimes one of the answers. Another answer is the father. The father owns his children. One may say the mother owns the children, because she grew the children. So there's so many different answers. And ultimately, we take the answer that it's Krishna. Krishna owns the children. Krishna owns everyone. So that's some consideration about ownership. Another interesting point. I looked at the word mleccha. Now, the word mleccha, it appears a lot in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's generally translated as, who can see? There's two translations, very common translations to the word mleccha in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's different from today's translation. Meat eaters, yes. And Muslim, yes. These are generally the two ways it's translated. In today's synonyms, it is translated as disobedient to the Vedic principles. Actually, if you look at a dictionary, mleccha comes from the root mlech, which means to speak badly or mispronounce. And then in particular, means those people who do not speak nicely, namely those who do not speak Sanskrit. So according to this definition, if you don't speak Sanskrit, you're a mleccha. Now, this is a dictionary. We don't go with dictionary definitions. There's no rule that you have to speak Sanskrit to not be a mleccha. This, the one given by Prabhupada here, which is the Bhagavatam version, not the Chaitanya Charitamrita version, Bhagavatam version, disobedient to the Vedic principles. It's interesting that Gaur Govinda Maharaj used to sometimes say, English is a nasty language. He had this wonderful knowledge of Sanskrit. So he would, you know, we generally when we give class, we kind of speak in English, then we think, what's the Sanskrit? He was kind of speaking in Sanskrit, thinking, what is the English for this? And he'd give the word, and sometimes his disciples would say, oh, that word means that. So he seemed to know Sanskrit even better than he knew English. So he described English as a nasty language. Another interesting passage just on this point. You know, Prabhupada said, let there be one scripture, you know, let there be one language, he said. So devotees, they once asked, what, Sanskrit? And Prabhupada said, no, English. Don't know why he said it. Anyway, let there be one language, English. Well, Prabhupada's books are all in English, so of of course, they're translated into so many other languages. But let it be in English. Anyway, let's carry on. I was considering, you know, that this chapter is about Lord Parashuram. So his pastime is mainly about killing. And then today's purport is about Kalki, who's also about killing. Actually, the two avatars, they're different categories. You know that Parashuram, he's Jiva Tattva. He's an empowered incarnation. And Kalki is Vishnu Tattva. Just to let you know. Here's another point. Kalki is considered a Leela avatar. Now, this is a little interesting because if you've read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll know that there was a discussion between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Gopinathacharya. After Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he saw the wonderful ecstatic symptoms of Lord Chaitanya. He still did not accept that Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what he argued was, he said, the Lord is known as Tri-Yuga. He only appears in three yugas. Therefore, he doesn't appear in Kali Yuga. Therefore, this cannot be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj, he says, Chanak Kalau Yadabhavas Tri-Yugo Tasat Tvam. In Kali Yuga, you are covered. Therefore, you are known as Tri-Yuga. In other words, you do come, but you're just covered. That's the only reason. So Gopinathacharya, he corrected him, he said, actually, this means there's no Leela avatar, but actually there's a Yuga avatar. There's always a Yuga avatar. So that's kind of an interesting point that he says there's no Leela avatar, but actually Kalki, I mean, he's coming at the end, right? So maybe that's why he's actually classified as a Leela avatar. Because Prabhupada mentions three avatars in particular for Kali Yuga. That's Lord Chaitanya, Buddha, and Kalki. So, although he's a Leela avatar, I think it's probably because he comes at the end, he's not considered such a Leela avatar as such. And actually, Prabhupada explains why there is no Leela avatar. Do you know why? In Kali Yuga, why there's no Leela avatar? Why does Lord come disguised? You know why? It's because of the infection of Mayavad. There's so much Mayavad infection that if the Lord displays his pastimes as the Lord, then everyone will want to imitate him. So he doesn't, in Kali Yuga, he doesn't have a Leela avatar like that. It's interesting that all religions, they all understand the Lord as full of love for the living entities. But we see in Krishna's pastimes and his pastimes of his avatars, there's so much killing going on, right? Now, Kalki, his main purpose is killing. Parashuram's main purpose is killing. But even like Krishna, he has his other pastimes, but there's a lot of killing going on. Actually, it's quite interesting that we think of the battle of Kurukshetra as the main kind of slaughter in Krishna's pastimes. But actually, there were, I think it was 18 Aukshahinis destroyed. Is that right? So there were 7 Pandava Aukshahinis and 11 Kauravas. That makes 18 Aukshahinis killed in the Battle of Kurukshetra. But if you look at the pastime where Krishna's killing the forces of Jarasandha, there's 23 Aukshahinis the first time, and then he's doing it time and time again. So there's mass slaughter going on. So this is difficult for some people to understand, and especially for mundane moralists. They think, well, you know, what kind of God is going to kill all these people? What kind of God is this? There's actually a whole field of a department of knowledge that discusses this very question. It's called theodicy. It means it's basically the problem of evil. God is all powerful, God is all merciful. Therefore, why is there suffering in the world? If he's all merciful, why does he not stop it? If he can't stop it, he's not all powerful. If he can stop it, why is he not stopping it? It's the problem, right? Now, in the 11th canto, there's an interesting sloka. Kim badram kim abadram ba dvaitasya vastu na kiyat vajoditam tadanritam manasajatam evacha. Said, whatever we say, whatever words we say, whatever we think in our mind, that is all illusion. It is all a vastu. It's not ultimately real. Therefore, where is the question of good and bad in this world? So the whole question is preempted here. There is no question of good and bad in this world. But due to our own absorption in duality, Icha, Dvesha, Samutina, Dvandva, Mohina, Bharata, we come into this world with a dualistic conception. Because of that, we think good and bad in this material world. But we should understand from the transcendental platform, that is actually not the case. Now this verse is also Kim Bhadram, Kim Abhadramva. It also appears in a modified form in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Dvaiti Bhadra Bhadra Gyan Sabha Mano Dharma E Bhalo E Manda E Sabha Brahm. Meaning, to say this is good or this is bad, that is all an illusion, because it is simply Mano Dharma, or just the mind, the platform of the mind. So going back to this philosophical question, why is there evil in the world? It's interesting to note, there was a period in which the devotees were presenting the philosophical position of the various Western philosophers. It became a book called Dialectic Reasoning, right? So many philosophers, Srila Prabhupada, he was exposed to so many philosophies, Western philosophies, and he gave his comments here and there. Now, in one lecture, he said, Western philosophers are pretty much all on the mental platform. That was his observation. He made one exception. He said, Socrates, he's Brahman realized. Why would he say that? Because he was happy to drink the hemlock. He was cheerful. He understood he wasn't this body. Therefore, it wasn't a problem to drink hemlock, as was his punishment. But Prabhupada explains most Western philosophy is mental. So if we're on the mental platform, we see in terms of dualities of good and bad, then we will never understand the pastimes of the Lord. And many people who are agnostic, they become atheistic because they think, well, there's so much suffering in the world, therefore there cannot be a God. It is there. But this is mental. So what do the scriptures say about this question? Why is there so much killing? Why is Kalki killing? So much killing. Well, ultimately, it's killing of demons. For one point, there's a great benefit. To be killed by Krishna or any of his avatars is actually a benediction. Now, there's one verse in the seventh canto. It's Kama Dvesha Bayad Snehat Yata Bhakjeshvare Manaha Avesha Tadagam Hitva Bahavas Tadgatin Gataha. Whether one absorbs oneself in thoughts of the Lord out of lust, out of envy, out of fear, out of affection, out of devotion, one gets the same destination. This is the beginning of the seventh canto. So what do you think of that verse? Does that make sense? Do you agree with that? Do the demons get the same destination as the gopis? Who can say? No? Right. Correct. No. So what then is the meaning of this verse? It actually has been explained. It's explained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindha, and I think it's also explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. What is the meaning of this verse? How can they all get the same destination when we know they don't? The answer is given because Brahman and Krishna are one. See, the demons, they get impersonal liberation. But what is the tattva? Vedanti tat tattva vedas tattvam yajjyanam advayam brahmeti brahmatmeti bhagavaniti shabjati. There are three phases, and they are known as Advaya Gyan, which means, what does it mean? Advaya means what? Non-dual, yes. So it's non-dual. So that's actually the explanation that the Acharyas have given. So when we understand that, when we say that if you absorb yourself out of fear, like, who did it? Who's the famous example? Kamsa and Dvesha, famous example. Envy. Shishupal, right. When we say they get the same destination, we understand, yes, they get the transcendental platform, but they don't get entry into Vrindavan, the highest conception of association with Krishna. That's actually what it's meant. So seen from this angle, we understand that the killing of the Lord and his awarding of benedictions is all good. Either way, you come out the dualities of illusion, of delusion. So in that way, we should understand the pastimes of the Lord to be wonderful and glorious. Also, these pastimes, they give a great opportunity for the Lord to enjoy. Now, this question, going back to this question, the problem of why is there suffering, the most detailed explanation of this point I've ever seen is in Jiva Dharma. And there's about seven different parts to the answer. But one of the answers is this. Okay, the Lord is merciful. He's known as Karuna Maya, which means he's merciful. But he's also Lila Maya, means he enjoys so much pastime. Therefore, how can we deny the pastimes of the Lord? If he takes pleasure in putting us in this situation where we suffer, and by that suffering we learn our lesson, and we ultimately turn to him, and we ultimately develop pure love of God, where is the fault? How can we deny him this Lila? So that's one of the answers. The Lord's Lila. So we should see things from his perspective. You know, if we're absorbed in our own happiness and distress, that is Maya, that is illusion. There's another statement in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Atma sukha dukhi gopira nahi kavachar. For the gopis, they do not consider happiness and distress. They're completely dedicated to Krishna's service. So as devotees, that is our goal. So if our unhappiness is happiness for Krishna, then our unhappiness is our greatest happiness. This is the special quality of Srimati Radharani. If our unhappiness is Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. If Radharani's misery gives pleasure to Krishna, then she considers that misery to be her greatest happiness. It's inconceivable. That is the way we should look at it. So this killing, as well as helping, as well as liberating the demons, as well as giving an opportunity to rectify our rebellious nature, it is also pleasure in and of itself for the Lord. Now, sometimes there's this discussion about the Jai and Vijay pastime. There's an interesting statement by, I believe it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He explains that actually the cause of this fall down of Jai and Vijay, so-called fall down, was actually they desired that the Lord should have a good fight. Because they were thinking, they're the doorkeepers in Vaikuntha, and they were thinking, the Lord doesn't get to fight because everyone's a devotee. He needs a good demon to fight. So in order to facilitate that desire, the Lord arranged that Jai and Vijay should be cursed by the four Kumaras and come to this planet and then engage in so many pastimes of fighting with the Lord. So he has a desire to fight. There's a whole rasa there. Fighting is wonderful. You know, you see in this world, if you have two good fighters, then you can make millions of pounds, right? You televise it and you show it on TV you sell out tickets, you know. A good fight is very attractive. People like to see it. And whether it's, I mean, the rasas there, in the Cowherd Boys, they're always fighting. There's play fighting. And it's Vira Ras. There's Sakya Ras, but then there's this Vira Ras. There's the Adbhuta Ras. That is a wonder. When there's fighting, like when Krishna, he's throwing arrows at Sridham, and Sridham's got this stick and he's doing all this and defending and blocking all the arrows. That is wonderful. So when you have fighting, you have all these other secondary rasas come in. And Baya is another secondary rasa, fear. The fear's there. Now, fear in this material world, we don't like it. But in the spiritual platform, fear is wonderful. So there's Vira Ras, Baya Ras, and then there's also Bibatsa. Fear is actually Bayanaka. There are seven secondary rasas. And Bayanaka is fear, but there's Bibatsa. Bibatsa means ghastliness. I remember once listening to a lecture by Tribhuvanath Prabhu, and he put it in a really nice way. He said, you know, ordinary things are not interesting. You know, you've got a head on a shoulder, set of shoulders. It's not very interesting. But if the head's off, then everyone's very interested to see. Now, this is a not nice thing to say, but when sometimes, as we know, in this world of terrorism, sometimes people get their heads cut off, and sometimes people put it on the internet. But you know, when that gets put on the internet, millions of people watch it. You know, the people are fascinated. So Tribhuvanath says this point. When something extraordinary happens, something very unusual, people are very interested. Now in this country, if you're going down the dual carriageway, if there's an accident on one side, they slow down the traffic on both sides. Have you noticed? Now, the reason is they know that people are driving along and everyone's like, what can I see? You know, it's an ambulance. Wow, I'm going to see a dead body or something, you know. People are very interested to see things unusual. So they have to slow down the traffic just so there's no accidents. Or in some countries, they have a big screen. I think in Italy, someone was saying, they have a big screen. So as soon as an accident, they put the screen across the road so no one can see what's going on. So no one's tempted to be distracted, or else there'll be another accident on the other side of the road. So this is part of fighting. There's so much there. And there's the example of Bhishma. Now, Bhishma, he's in Dasya Ras, but he has a certain chivalry rasa, secondary rasa with Krishna. So when they're fighting, it's described that Bhishma's arrows were like flower petals for Krishna. So Krishna loves a fight. He gets a good fight, and the demons, they actually get a good fight, and the spectators, they all get to watch, and it's really wonderful. You know, when Krishna's fighting, there's always everyone else is watching. When Krishna's fighting with Kaliya, then they're fainting, and or they're going through emotional hell, right? The residents of Vrindavan. But this is all the part of the rasa. All these fainting is like another symptom of ecstasy. Mother Yashoda, she's collapsing, she sees Krishna apparently defeated by Kaliya. So in this way, we have to see rasa from the transcendental perspective, or see fighting from the transcendental perspective. But if we're so absorbed in the mundane perspective, then our concept of God is very limited. It's just some very nice person that will make sure everything's nice all the time. And then because we see that there's evil in the world, we become atheists. So it's very difficult. How do you test someone as a real lover of God is if in spite of so many obstacles, they never give up their faith. So Prabhupada gave the example of during the war, you know, so the soldiers would go to war and the mothers were praying to God. And then, so if the soldiers died, then the mothers became atheists, right? Because they couldn't tolerate it. They couldn't believe that God would actually take away their son. So the real test is, can we actually accept everything as God's plan? That is the hard part. And if we can't, then we will turn away from God when the moment of crisis happens. So we have to be very, very deep and understand we don't see things on the bodily platform. So for example, if there is death of a devotee, then we don't see it as a sign that Krishna is not protecting. You know, Krishna says, Name bhakta pranashyati, my devotee never perishes. But we should understand what that actually means. The spiritual life of the devotee never perishes. So the body may perish, but the spiritual life never perishes. So this is the hard feature of the Lord. You know, if we're in the bodily platform, then we suffer. We don't like this aspect, but actually this is what the actual full concept of God is. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Sarva Harashchaham. What does that mean? Krishna tells Arjuna, Mrityu Sarva Harashchaham. Who can translate that one? Yes. I am all devouring death. Yes, Krishna is all devouring death. Death is the thing we hate the most, but Krishna says, I am that all devouring death. Here's another one. Dando Damayatam Asmi. What does that mean? Dando Damayatam Asmi. Think of the word danda. What does it mean? It doesn't just mean stick. Punishment, yes. He said, of ways of suppressing lawlessness, I am punishment. You see in countries that have very strict laws, then the crime rate's very low. That's generally the case. For example, in a Muslim country, if you drop your wallet, you can come back several hours later to the spot and you'll still find your wallet there. So they say. Why? Because if you steal something in Islamic countries, you get your hand chopped off. So not many people do it, you see. So ways of suppressing lawlessness is punishment. So this is Krishna. Here's another one. Kalosmi loka kshaya krit pravidha. What does that mean? And the great destroyer of the worlds. So all this is the... We have to appreciate this aspect of Krishna. You know, I was mentioning fear and ghastliness. There's other, these are called secondary rasas, which when they appear are called the staibhav. You know, in the words of rasa, there's a predominant emotion. Now we talk about our primary emotions as being our staibhav. Someone is maybe a dasya bhakta or a madhurya bhakta. That's called their staibhav or their fixed emotion. But these other seven secondary rasas, when they appear, they, for a time being, are referred to as the staibhav. They become the predominant emotion. So it's said in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that there are eight rasas we can experience. Why eight? Because one of them is our innate one. one of the five primary rasas, but then these other seven ones, they can also appear. But as well as these rasas, there's also these fleeting rasas that are called vyabhichari bhavs. They come and go. And one of them is violence, for example. It's like, actually, when you read them, I was reading what these rasas are, because I know some of them are very unusual. And when you read them, it's actually like reading a list of anartas. Lamentation, pride, envy, impudence, you know, disease, death. These are all called vyabhichari bhavs. They're symptoms of ecstasy. They come and go. Death, I think it means a death-like state. You know, if someone's in an ecstatic symptom, they can appear to be dead. How do we find out if they're actually dead or not? What's the way? Yeah, you take a little piece of cloth and you put it next to the nostril, and if there's a little slight breathing, you know the person's not dead. So this is what, when Lord Chaitanya fainted in the Jagannath temple, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you know, is checking to see if he's actually alive or not. They took him back to his house. So death, but actually, I mean, there's different types of death. There's actual real death as well. And it's said that as prema develops, you know, beyond a certain point, when you reach the platform of sneha, you actually can't maintain a material body. But before that, you can maintain a material body and still have ecstasy. But anyway, so these are some considerations. So going back to the point, these vyabhichari bhavs, so some of them, like there's this violence, you know, violence is one of them. There's ecstatic violence, whatever that means, you know. I'm not going to say exactly what it means. I mean, I had a guess. There's this wonderful ecstatic devotee, Minaketana Ramdas. He used to beat people. You know him? He's a great devotee of Lord Nityananda, and he had a flute, and he used to beat people with his flute in ecstasy. We have this, anyway, the whip. Who's that devotee? Is it Abhiram? He has a whip called Mangala or something, right? What, pardon? Jai Mangala. This devotee has a whip called Jai Mangala, and he whips people. And when they get whipped, they develop ecstatic love of God. Anyway, it's time up. I'll leave it for comments or questions. Hare Krishna. Thank you for tolerating.